We've made it to episode 2 and you're here with us. It's a mighty achievement on both fronts. Welcome to No Cure for Curiosity. Are you curious what this is all about? Well, we're three like-minded but differently skilled creative thinkers and makers. We're sharing ideas and the attitudes that keep us going. So let's say some hellos and we'll get to this episode's themes. My voice, the voice you're hearing, this is Dan Chichester.
And Mark Bellucci is the other voice.
And then Jeff Bradison here as well.
See, it's so simple. So every week we're going to tackle a topic that we think is worth considering when it comes to being creative. So for episode 2, we've got something called Will It Blend? Now, this isn't about the old blend tech idea. And this is all about how you can mix art and still make a living. So I think there's two questions I'll put out to you guys right away. Is all creative art? And then what's the secret formula to finding that combo? Is it the old work-life balance, or is there something more to bringing these two sides together for us?
Good ones. For those who remember the Will It Blend from the Blender days, and I think it was Blend Tech, I think you said that, Dan, it's kind of an homage to that, because it is kind of that, right? I mean, it is throwing all this disparate and sometimes crazy stuff in and seeing how it comes into your life and finding the work-life balance and stuff like that. And so I don't think there is any separation anymore between what your passion is, what you do as a hobby, what you do to create, and what you do for a living, even though they may be totally different. Very few people get to become a professional where they just do their one passion in life. We all have to kind of get by with things and still do our artwork. So we could get into why that, how that works, but I just think that it's all connected and crucial that you keep up on both ends.
Well, when you say it's all connected, though, how does that balance where people, even ourselves, sometimes we'll have day jobs or day assignments or whatever you want to call them, or night assignments for that matter, Jeff, where maybe that's not part of the thing that drives you. Is that still the melding of the two, or is there something else that you sort of have to use the creative part of yourself to kind of motivate the other work that you're doing? Or does vice versa, does being able to make a living at something give you the freedom to then do what you're more passionate about?
I think that you take a step back from that. And I think that as a culture, we're trained to drop things we're passionate about if they're not making money right away, if there's not a practical outlet. I know for myself, I mean, I came from a working class background and money was always an issue. My father had the highest degree, which was an associate's degree, which is an amazing feat considering he's in construction his whole life.
Right.
And so when we went to school and high school, and then, you know, looking at a college, there was going to be no money for major colleges. And there was no thought of any kind of job other than something that will make you make enough money to make a living. So in my case, the thought of going into creative writing or filmmaking or playwriting wasn't even an option, wasn't even in the realm of possibility. So that led to, you know, career stuff. Mm-hmm. But if there's an advantage to today, there's no clear path. And I think the mistake that prior generations made is to make a separation between making a living and doing what you love to do. And I think that if you're doing something creative and you feel, well, this is now frivolous because I have to, you know, put my work into my job, and my job has nothing to do with my writing poetry or something like that, I'll just drop this. And I think that's the biggest mistake you can make. You know, it's like saying, I don't need to exercise, or I don't need to brush my teeth. And I think as a culture, I think we're starting to see that those creative outlets may not work for your job today, or they may not be making you money today, but they'll make your job better. Even if that job is not connected, people now don't necessarily dismiss their creative outlets, and maybe social media lets them do more of it. Jeff, you can kind of tell me I'm crazy or just go along that point, but I think that's the first step. Is we all kind of thought, well, okay, this is frivolous because I need to make money today. And I think that's a dangerous way to think.
I can definitely elaborate on that. And I come from a very, I guess, different world than you did, Mark. You know, my dad was already in advertising, so I guess he could see very clearly that there are creative ways that you can make a living, you know, in the creative world. And like writing was not a foreign thing to, for him to see making a living at. My mom was, you know, she was also a creative person. She didn't work in advertising, but she was always painting and drawing and doing stuff. They still have artwork hanging up on their wall in their house that, you know, my mom created decades ago. That's pretty cool. So both my parents were really creative, and they pushed that. You know, I came out of high school. I had no idea what I wanted to do. And I joined an advertising agency my dad worked at, you know, just as a summer job. Mm-hmm. And slowly and surely I got into it, but there had always been, I'd always had an interest in music as a teenager. It was something I had always done and always loved doing. And as I got into advertising, the two went kind of hand in hand. And Dan, I think you were kind of echoing on this a little bit in that, like, you know, you've got your day job that you do, and that was advertising for me. And then there's a passion you have outside your profession where, you know, it's something you unwind with. And for me, that was composing music. It wasn't even just playing music. Like, I wasn't like just playing music that people already wrote. It's like, I would just come up with my own stuff, use my ear and my training and knowledge of music and start composing stuff. And I would spend hours doing that and just losing myself, you know, in a good way. You know, at the time, a rack of synthesizers and samplers and effects units and big mixing console.
Right.
I remember when my girlfriend, who's now my wife, when she first met me, she came into my condo in New York, and she's like, "What is that robot?" I guess it was all the blinking lights. But anyway, you know, I was doing that. And I guess in the mid-2000s, you know, the world started to blend. You know, I was already working in advertising and I was writing music, and I had this crazy idea, like, what if I put these two together? It was kind of funny. I started thinking about like writing music for TV spots. I was like, well, how do I do that? And then I got this idea. I was like, well, I'll just together a reel. And I was like, how do I do that? And I started actually recording TV spots that were interesting, or finding them and ripping the sound out of them and then rescoring them myself. Mm-hmm. And I basically created a reel out of that, which I'm sure, I don't know if there's some ethic code to that or not, but that's how I did it. I couldn't figure out another way. So I took pretty well-known TV spots, and like I would find them in the TV spots that basically didn't have any voice or just had music. And I rip it out and I put my own music in it. Of course, I didn't have like an account person or a client telling me like, that's not how we want it. So I could make some pretty cool
stuff.
Absolutely. I don't know. I must have sent out about 1,000 DVDs of this stuff out to producers and different advertising agencies. And at first I started getting gigs on products I was working on, because there's times where like, hey, we're working on this interactive project and we need a little music. And a lot of times someone else would do it. And I was like, I started raising my hand and said, I could do that. And I started writing music for a couple of interactive pieces. And that started being, you know, I started making money from it a little bit. And I was like, oh, this is cool. And slowly but surely, sending out so many of these DVDs to different producers and keeping at it and keeping at it, although I was not getting any gigs, eventually started to click. And people would email me or call me back, hey, we got your DVD and we think there might be a product you could work on with us. And I got a couple of little small projects here and there for like, you know, small regional advertising agencies. I think Bell South might have been the first one I did a project for. And then slowly but surely it worked up, and I scored a spot for Dunkin' Donuts. I did one for Scion. I did one for Nissan. I did another one for Motorola. And I started doing it. There wasn't one after that, trust me. It was like in between those gigs was at least a couple hundred DVDs going out to more producers. But they started coming in. They were legit. Mm-hmm. I had my advertising, my other advertising career as like a creative director also in play. And it was a kind of a dueling banjos kind of thing going on. And it was also kind of at the, I guess, an intersection point in my life where I had a daughter that was coming into the world at the time, and I had a house and all these responsibilities on me. And, you know, I stuck with being a creative director and staying in the, I guess in air quotes, the more traditional advertising world. But music is still a major part of my life. And I also know that from doing that, I have a different way that I look at creative and evaluate creative.
And you're still making music, right? You still...
Totally. I still make music. I still come home. I don't fire up a whole studio with synthesizers and samplers anymore.
So, Dan, I just want to jump in because I want to pull it back to something you said. You know, how do you find, like, if you have the day job and then you have some creative passion, how do you find the work-life balance? But just from Jeff's experience and mine in filmmaking and playwriting on top of, you know, the day job, I think that is the work-life, that is the work-life balance. If people dismiss that part of it as kind of the, you know, that's one of the niceties that has to go when I have a mortgage or when I have a kid. But the reality is, if you cultivate that spark, that will help you. That will help ground you, no matter how crazy the day job is. Create whatever you're creating for 20 minutes a day, you know, or a half hour, whatever it is, 15 minutes a day. Even just to do that little bit every day gives you perspective, and it gives you that unfettered joy of just making something that you yourself own and create. And I think that makes you, like Jeff said, that makes you, in his job as a creative director, that hones his skills as a creative director. And it also can become what this topic is about, either an additional way to make money with, you know, outside sales of music, as Jeff has done, but the also is the underlying part, or the not recognized part, is Jeff becomes a better creative director because he has a whole new perspective because of all the stuff he's done with music, and it keeps fingers in the pie, if you will. So his value as a creative director goes up. And I think that's the misnomer of, you know, doing this stuff. Yes, you're not getting paid for that 20 minutes you do it a day, or that half hour and stuff, but the kind of,
and I don't think you have to. Don't take me wrong. I wasn't suggesting that it has to be that what you do has to lead to the dollars in that way. But I'm curious about, Jeff, you sound like at that certain point you had, or were moving toward, a really unique mix of things where you were doing something you were really jazzed about, pun intended, and you were starting to gain some traction. And what, you know, you said you sort of chose between the two paths a little bit. And then why not continue to sort of push against the music and the inroads you were making there, which would have been, in some ways, it sounds like, not that you're not very passionate and very good at what you do in a creative director or an art director role, but in some ways it sounded like you were starting to find a really, really great balance of the two sides.
I think it was far from balanced. It was like doing two jobs that were really, really, really demanding. And one of them I had to do one or the other. They both couldn't live on
right.
parallel.
So why not like nix the creative director or art director one and pursue the musicians?
Like I said, I think it comes back to my responsibilities at the time. If I had done it 10 years prior, maybe it might have worked out. But the music thing, just if I had turned off the other, the music thing was not going to, like, at the end of the day, support my family. Not even close. There were pretty good gigs, but there was a lot of chasing in between them, a lot more than even when I freelance, you know, as a creative director. I'm sure it gets less hard, but I think at that moment, I just did not have the bandwidth to continue to pound at it. And the other road I was much more established in. But it brings me to another point, and I don't mean to hog the microphone. But, you know, besides music, I also have a passion for photography. And I know that Mark was talking about that the last time. It just happened. I was going out to Utah. I was into mountain biking at the time. Brought a film camera with me. I knew a photographer friend of mine. He's like, oh, you're going out to Utah. Bring your camera and load it up with Fuji Valley. I was like, all right, this guy knows what he's doing. I'll put that film in and I'm going to come out with some killer photos. So I went out there and I was just going out and shooting. I had no idea what I was doing. I come back and most of my photos, I would say 90% of them were complete crap. They were garbage. Anyway, there was a couple of them that accidentally came out awesome. Purely accident. It wasn't like I just happened to point the camera in the right place and the light was a certain way that with the settings that were all messed up just came out. And I was excited by that. And I went back and I was like, okay, I just swung it and I did it. And some of them were cool. I want to learn how to make all of them, or most of them, cool. So I learned how to work a camera that way. And I started learning about focus and f-stops and depth of field and composition and all these things that you should learn, you know, as a photographer. You know, at the same time, now today I have, you know, three kids. I have a son and a daughter and a foster son. I've been creating these visual stories with my kids. I will say, kids' imaginations are about 10 times crazier or wilder than any crazy client I have. They come up with crazy ideas. I mean, like my daughter, like, you know, I think it was last year, she said, Dad, this idea for one of those photos that you do, she's like, imagine I'm building a rocket-powered hovercraft in our garage with a surfboard, and we're driving it down the bridge up the block, and mommy's chasing us because she's mad because we're riding it without any permission and we're not wearing helmets. This sounds awesome. Let's do it. And we did do it. It came out really awesome. But I mean, that's the kind of crazy ideas they come up with. And I'm like, and we do it. And it comes out pretty awesome. Sometimes I almost get hit by cars, taking pictures of bridges in the middle of the street. But that's another story. But anyway, it gets back to this idea. Like, these are things that I'm learning and skills that I'm learning that I am definitely applying. So getting back to, you know, what Mark was saying, and Dan, you were saying, is like, how does some of these things influence like your real life? Like, I now have the confidence that like I could have a client that could come up with the most crazy harebrained idea. And I'm fairly certain now that I could probably make it look like something that they were thinking. Just by the fact that if my kids can challenge me with like anything they can imagine and I can kind of make it happen.
That's the whole blend thing. And I think that's a classic example of, well, a few things. First, you don't create when the financial opportunity says, okay, now it's time to do it. You create because you create, you know, that's the thing. And you have a trust. And now you now have the experience of knowing this is definitely blending into your ability to make a living, whether it does, whether or not you do a specific type of project you're doing for your kids, for a client at a good commission ever is almost irrelevant to the fact that it changes you. It enhances your skills. It keeps you fresh and sharp and knowing all the latest technologies and techniques at a better, with a better understanding than if you're reading it in a book or watching a video about it, because you're living it. And the other thing is, you're not doing it with an ulterior motive. You're doing it because your kids, it's also bringing, you know, the work-life thing. You're also having a ball with your kids. So yeah. And there's so many things. So you could be locked in your room working on client stuff and moaning and bitching and saying, you know, I hate the gig. I hate this gig. I hate that. And sometimes we all do that, but at the end of the day, you're going to do something that your kids are going to love to see. Your kids have the joy of, you know, creating with you. And as I've always bugged you to do, you know, I mean, this might be a gallery, you know, presentation, or, you know, we do a documentary video on it. The creating we do on our own, which kind of is, you know, innate, that helps every day in so many different ways. And it's going to make you money, whether it's, you know, a direct sale of something you make, or whether it's better performance of what you do, or a more creative way of doing whatever it is.
Yeah. I mean, even Dan and I working together, he knows, like, if we come up with some kind of crazy idea, concept or something like that, like, you know, Dan, I'm going to bring in my camera rig tomorrow. We're going to shoot it. You know, like, you can't find stock imagery for this stuff. So I was bringing in, we're going to find someone in the agency. It's going to be our guinea pig. I'll bring my camera in. We'll light it. I'll shoot it. You know, we've come up with ideas that way. And not only just like little harebrained ideas, like they look good. Like, they're ideas we can sell to a client. So yeah, it's cool.
Let me nudge this a little bit just so we see if we keep this one interest, because it sounds like, you know, we're all like amazingly well-balanced. I'm not, you know, in its own way, but you know, you got it all like worked out. This just becomes a boring sort of podcast if we don't introduce some drama into it. So then what are things people need to watch out for? What are things in our minds, if we're not that we're suddenly the couch for people to rest on and get advice, but then what are the techniques that you need to do to, if you want to get to this place? Because I think a lot of people are going to struggle. I know I struggle. I feel like I've had an 18-year, not gap of certain things, but there's parts of me that I know I sublimate it in certain ways to focus on the stuff in front of me. And that's not everything, but there's a lot of aspects that can push you away from other things. So, you know, what are the things that we start to recommend to make that space for yourself? I always feel is, and Mark, you're getting to this, or I've gotten to this a couple of times, if you're making something creative, you have to make time, I think, to do it. There's always that expression, well, find the time. But I don't think it's a matter of finding the time. I think it's a matter of making the time and literally carving it out. And I've always had, I think, better success in my way of approaching things, setting some kind of goal and creating toward that, which isn't the same as, oh, I need to get paid for that. I think you're even seeing this, Jeff, or saying this in what you're indicating with the creations for your family. Somebody brought you an assignment in a way, you know, you had a goal. And otherwise, I think, to me at least, that's that can you set the goal for yourself in one way or another, and it helps you then decide to make the time that is that 20 minutes or whatever per day to get to that next.
Yeah, I mean, I can elaborate on that a little bit. Initially, I think when I first, like the first part where I was talking about how, you know, music was infused with my professional life, there wasn't as much discipline, and I was a single guy, I had tons of time, freedom. I did, it was kind of like very loose, and things just kind of happened, except for the part where I was like, oh, what happens if I put these two together, right? I kind of then didn't kind of like force it and make it happen. But and now that I've got a family, you know, and you, all of us have family, like your time's a little bit tighter. It's a little more precious. I have found that in order to kind of have some kind of creative outlet outside of work, like I need to fuse the two a little bit together so I can kind of like, I guess, do double duty on getting some family time and some creative time and putting them together. And I don't know if I planned it that way, but it kind of worked out that way that like coming up with these stories with my kids, it gives me time with my kids, but I'm doing something kind of fun, and it's fun for them. And it's fun for me at the same time. Like I'm sure if I try to sit down and brainstorm this, I probably wouldn't have come up with this idea. It just kind of like came together, but that's kind of how at least I'm now doing it. It's like, it's serving two purposes of a little bit of family time and a little bit of creative time together. But it requires discipline. It's like, I have to plan it out, think it out, schedule it. If you ever saw the behind the scenes photos of these things, it's kind of funny. I have behind the scenes of like my kids hitting each other with foam core. We're trying to do these shoots. They kind of get a little, sometimes go a little off track. But at the end of the day, it comes together. But anyway, the way I work is I shoot all these different pieces, and then later on, I put them all together. It all starts with the background.
I just find the whole description of everything. You've been like on a rip tonight, you know, a great one. Like last time you were a little stepping back. So, you know, you drunk the Kool-Aid and you sort of step forward. And while it's not exactly, you know, where you sort of think this theme is going to go, you know, will it blend, you know, what's that balance of making a living and making art or creative, as it were, what I'm taking away from this, and you're building on some of the things you mentioned last time, but it's just the intent of your, of doing great things with your family, you know, doing great things with these people who are so important to you, that I'm coming away with as a big driver of you. I'm not talking about that, but I know that's something that's meaningful to me, but you're combining, you know, what you're achieving with that is inspirational and also just really cool, because it is, it feels like it's fueling so much of what you do beyond just simply, oh, I have a responsibility to these people.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, I mean, it's a bonding. It brings us together. Mm-hmm. I'm sharing kind of what I do. It's like, it's hard to like, I describe what I do and they're kind of like, okay. I just see you kind of working in a computer all the time, but they kind of start to see when I'm doing stuff, they're like, oh, it starts to click with them, like how it all works and how I work and
right.
The programs I use and the design and the thinking behind it. You know, like it's not just like it just appears and it happens. There's like a lot of thinking that happens behind the scenes.
Do you see them picking up on creativity in the same way that you say you were inspired by your own parents and having their artwork and such hanging around the house? Do you see the work that you're doing with them as bringing something out in them as well?
Definitely my daughter. I mean, like I said, she just performed at Carnegie Hall today. So like the music side of it, definitely she's taken a liking to that. She listens to a lot of the same composers that I listen to, both contemporary and classical composers, and you know, even electronic composers. She's into it. And it's just because she's heard me hear it. She's like, oh, that's cool. She asked me, what is that? And then she, you know, she adds it to her Pandora list and starts listening to it. It's interesting. I think there is something there to sharing with them and involving them in the process and helping them understand it. And, you know, there's some influences. I don't know if they're going to be a photographer or designer or creative director one day or in advertising at all. You know, but they'll understand it a little bit and, you know, may influence whatever they may end up doing.
Yeah, that's a crucial point there too, which whatever they do, there's what job today is there not creativity in? You know, in my case, you know, my wife's a singer and a voice teacher, and I'm a writer and filmmaker, and I have two kids that are going to be in school for engineering, you know, mining engineering and mechanical engineering. And they start talking about quantum physics and I'm trying to figure out how to spell it. But they're also, when they're talking about this video presentation they want to make or this video They want to do about an anime show they're watching, or, you know, whatever it is, but they're already incorporating all the creativity that they have and maybe grown up in this house to engineering. And, you know, engineers have to be creative, and, you know, astrophysicists have to be creative. So, you know, we are all from advertising backgrounds, but that doesn't mean that creativity is limited to that. If anything, you know, I was going to say, if anything, it's a problem that people, again, kind of don't, you know, assume, well, that's a creative job and that's not a creative job. And, you know, to your point, whether they get into the field or not is secondary, whatever they're doing, just to be able to look at it differently makes it that much more, makes them more valuable and therefore, you know, helps them with their career, but also makes it more interesting for them.
There's two things I think that they've learned is, like, not everything is as you see it. It's not all black and white, right? Like, you can open your mind up and see a possibility in just about anything. The other thing is they've seen their daddy, like, fail miserably, you know, like, in coming up with some of these things. Like, they're off the wall ideas. Mm-hmm. And, like, there'll be times where I'll try something and I'll be like, that didn't work. And I'll show it to them. They're like, see, daddy did this, this, and this. And they're like, yeah, that didn't work. And then we'll look back at it and we'll be like, okay, why didn't it work? What can we do different? How can we figure this out? So I think the other lesson they're getting is like, you know, you're not going to succeed at everything like the first shot out. Matter of fact, it's probably better you don't, like, that you fail at something, because coming out of that, as long as you don't just gloat and be like, oh, that stunk and I failed, and they just give it up. As long as you look at it and learn from it and then apply it and learn something new, then, like, I think they're all seeing, like, failing and trying things over and learning from it makes you better really quick.
Yeah, the more chances you have to fail, the more chances that one of those will not fail.
There's been lessons that have been learned from it, so it's all good, and it can apply to other things.
So I will encapsulate what you did and what I've done and what you've done, Dan, and I thought about, like, this three or four elements to your original question, Dan, of how do you kind of, you know, do it every day? How do you keep at it? And there's, like, a few elements that you have to have. And one of them is just stubbornness. If your urge is to go sculpt with pogo stick, if your urge is to, you know, take pictures and then bring digital into it, it's got to be, you know, something you're stubborn about in that you're not going to give it up. Even if your job is to be a welder or a, you know, a waiter or whatever it is, an accountant or even in advertising, to just be stubborn and say, no, I don't care. This is going to happen. And, you know, Jeff's a great example of that. I mean, you spend a month on something that's going to fail because your kids are into it. I mean, that's a good example of stubbornness, or, you know, my stubbornness to write every day. You know, you can call it discipline or you can call it what you want. I'm not giving this shit up. This is not even on the table. The other element, or one of the other elements, is the ability to, and Jeff talked about it, just a pragmatic aspect to say, I'm not giving this shit up. I can't do it all day, but I am going to do it on that train ride in. I'm not reading the industry or Facebook or, you know, any of those things till I get my half hour in, or till, in your case, Dan, I move closer towards that goal I set for myself. That has to happen before anything. I will put in whatever you decide. I used to do 15 minutes a day on writing. That 15 minutes will get done. And that's the second element. The third is risk taking. The risk taking doesn't, now the risk, that's the big variable. And that's where Robert Rodriguez has done a million films, you know, basically signed up to be a subject in drug testing so he could get enough money to do his first film, El Mariachi. Joe and Nathan Russo, who just did Avengers and Infinity Wars and have worked their way to be top directors, maxed out credit cards and student loans to do their first full length after doing tons of short films, and were lucky enough to get noticed. So they took giant risks, and I never took that risk. Jeff never took that risk, and you never, well, not recently, you haven't taken that risk. So what your level of risk taking will determine is, it's like playing roulette. Like, I'm putting it all on 13 red or black or 12, whatever it is, or I'm going to space around the table. That's everybody's decision, but it will affect how Jeff took that, you know, when he was looking, when he was doing music versus advertising, did not take the giant risk of saying, screw advertising. I'm going to, you know, lay it all on the line here and see if I can, you know, he found a pragmatic answer that worked for him. I mean, it was the right answer. It was the right answer for Jeff. Somebody else might have said, this is my one chance. I'm going to go full in. And somebody else might have said, no, I have no more time for music. I'm just going to do this. And I've seen it. I've worked with people on all sides of that equation. My favorite story is I was writing the story for a musical, and I was working with a guy who was older, at least in his mid, maybe 80s, and he was he had run a financial business, financial consulting, whatever. Had a beautiful duplex in the city, and he kept saying to me, he had come out of Harvard. There was a Harvard Toasty or something like that, a Harvard musical review. And he loved musicals. And he said, my biggest regret in life is I didn't go into musicals. And here's a guy who's got this beautiful duplex and has got everything in his life. And I've known a million actors on the other side who can't get insurance because they've dedicated their lives to trying to make it as an actor or a playwright. And they're saying, I wish I had some financial security. So there's no right or wrong answer. It's the risks you take will determine what path you're on. And the risk that we all have to take, whatever you decide, is the risk of putting it out there. And that's the risk of Jeff's case, you know, showing the kids and saying, it sucks, but I spent a month on it. In my case, it's sending out films that get rejected by, no matter how many times you've been in festivals, you're still going to get rejected way many more times than you'd like, or, you know, plays or things like that. And that also comes, but then that goes back to stubbornness. Because if you keep writing them or you keep creating them and you have this backlog of things that you've created, written, shot, whatever, then you owe it to them to put them out there, but you still have to be ready to take the rejection or have it be produced or shot and people say, what the hell was that?
You can filter yourself really easily, right? It's not perfect. It's not right. Somebody else has done it already, but you haven't done it yet. And that's the thing. It's your version of whatever it is, and but that's a wholly original vision or your interpretation of something or something you were influenced by or inspired by. And taking that risk, not being perfect, but you're looking for some degree of audience. I think with your creativity, it's not always a necessity, but I think you want a response. You want a response, good or bad. You're not just, I don't feel sometimes being creative, that you just wanted to express for yourself. That's part of it. You're driven, but I think people do enjoy a sense of reaction.
I think Stephen King in his, he wrote a great book on writing, and it was one, who better to write it? Guy who's never stops writing. But he said, you're not a writer till you're published. And it sounded cold and it sounded heartless, but you know, his point was, you have to first write stuff and write a ton of stuff because you're going to get a lot of it rejected. And like Jeff's music, you're going to send out a million letters and 999,000 of them and 9,999 on top of that are going to come back rejected, but you have to get them out there. And then you have to be, you know, accepted in your field by others. And that's when you become, you know, a writer or a music composer, you know, whatever it is. And I think people who, you know, just kind of fill the basket with, you know, little snippets of things and so on and so forth, they're not really, you have to go through that effort. You have to put
you
it
have
out
to go
there.
Through the effort.
You have to
go through the effort. But do you agree? And I love that book by King as well. On Writing is one of the best books on writing. But I guess that's where I maybe disagree, and maybe I feel like we're almost veering away from some of what we said before, what I thought we were kind of saying before, and I know we're trying to get toward the end of certain things, but because if you have to be published, you know, you brought up that point. I don't know if that's the point you're trying to make, because I think it's valid if somebody creates something and they put it out there, they put out those little snippets, they put out that little musical cue, they put out that ringtone, they put out that piece of code, they put out an image that they retouched and added something really special to, and it gave it their quality. And they shared, I guess, to me, it's a bigger thing, share it with the world. And the publication is not a necessary validation, because maybe that doesn't happen, or maybe it's not something you're really interested in. But I think expressing it and putting it out there is something. I think there's something, at least to me, to do that. There's a sense of bravery and a sense of next step. Now, a lot of people will say you can create art and you can create creativity and just keep it to yourself. I'm on my easel in my basement and I'm satisfied with that. But I think a lot of the things that we look at as creativity, writing and filmmaking and photography and music, these crave an audience to a certain extent. So is the publication a necessary validation, or is it just simply that it's the expression?
Well, I'll correct or update Stephen King and myself here, because publication now has changed to be an audience. But what I mean is, you could put it out on YouTube or Facebook or wherever you're putting it out, but you need to have an audience. You have to strive to get an audience for what you do. And that doesn't mean you're going to succeed. It doesn't mean that you're going to get the piece that has a million hits on YouTube, which to me is now the equivalent of getting published, right? Or you're going to get published in a journal stuff. But you always have to put stuff out there with the thought, I need to get this out there, and I can't stop and when it's just online or I self-publish and things like that, because then you'll never continue to hone your craft. You'll never see where you need to push it harder, where you need to go to do more. And I think there's two levels here. One is, yeah, I'm going to just write my poetry and collect them or show them to my family. And that's nice and that's good. And then that also will help you maybe with your job and stuff. But to me, the real value of this is taking that risk, putting it out, but getting it and building an audience and thinking, what do I do next to build that audience? I think that if you're stubborn and you continue to make stuff and you continue to really say, this is what I do and what I am, then you need to keep pushing that. And if you're not getting responses to what you do, then you have to be, that's the risk part of it. You have to accept that I need to work harder at this, or I need to take it in a different direction, or I need to find something unique here. That's creativity. And I think doing it, you know, I mean, for yourself is wonderful, but that's real creativity to me, is to just keep pushing it till you feel that what was my goal? My goal was to finish something and get it online and get whatever, 500 followers or 500 likes or 20 likes, whatever it is. You're right. That's maybe the equivalent of getting published in a book, but you have to have that as an end goal, or else, you know, you're never going to keep honing it.
One way that we try to ensure there's no cure for curiosity is we keep our radar out all the time for things that are bright and shiny and that inspire us. And that's this part of the program that I've been calling the Incurables over our entire two episodes here, to just kind of say what inspired us this week, what's motivating us, what's motivating then each other as we kind of share it with each other. Maybe it motivates you who are listening as well. So there's two things I'll throw in. One, yesterday was Free Comic Book Day, which is this kind of a odd little ritual that comic book stores do to try to drive traffic in. And they have a host of free comics that have been specially prepared by different publishers to kind of trigger interest, hopefully, in people continuing to come back to the store and then buy the ones that aren't free and derive traffic for these stores. And to me, it was a great spread. We went to a new comic store we hadn't been to before. It was up in Harrison, New York, called Oh Yeah Comics. And they, I don't know if it was this year or this particular store, but the spread of comics they had was far more diverse than your usual assortment of some superheroes and some fun kids books. there was a lot of what you'd call independent books. And there was also a bunch of artists they had brought in, artists and writers and creative teams, about four or five, with their own publications. And it was everything from a young genius child trapped in a alternate world meeting aliens to a kind of a ghost story between an owl and this young girl who may or may not have been through some kind of dysfunctional relationship. And it was all done in a very painterly style. But to me, it was just great to see this range of stories and creativity executed by people in this medium. And it was really none that I was familiar with before. And it really kind of triggered a lot of interest in me really quickly. It's a fun day to kind of go to and just enjoy and see what's kind of happening there. And the other thing I kind of came across this week was a video by this guy called Rob Bell. And he was talking about this Japanese approach to life. It's called Ikigai. And I guess it was fairly popular in the 70s. Maybe it's making a resurgence. Maybe that's why he did this video. But it's this idea of a Japanese concept, and it translates as the reason for being. And I think it aligns a lot to what we're talking about and the things that we're trying to think of what drives us. And one of the things he said in this video that really resonated with me in finding this alignment of the things in your life, this kind of work and this balance and art, you find the things that really align. And when you get to them, it really brings you back to certain aspects of yourself. And one of the things he said was, as children, we don't ask for success, we ask for wonder, which I thought was just a great phrase and a great way to think about, because that's what you're trying to achieve with your creativity, is that sense of wonder for yourself and for others.
Nice. Awesome.
Yeah. So I'm reading this book, and I picked it up as, something to drive me forward, to break through. And it's this book called Grit by Angela Duckworth. It's the subtitle is The Power of Passion and Perseverance. So the whole premise of this book is that, and she's done actual like scientific studies about it, where it is, what's more powerful? Is it pure talent or just the willingness to succeed no matter what? This idea of grit. And she has found, and she's been hired by some of the top consulting firms out there and worked with the U.S. Army and a bunch of different, you know, big organizations to help them to break through. And the idea is like through study and practice and putting this forward, that grit has the power to persevere over anything. Like the people who are tremendously talented, but don't go that far. And there are people who you kind of shake your head and go, how did they get there? And a lot of it is this power of grit. And I'm finding a really interesting read or interesting story, and highly recommend it to just about anybody, whether you're starting your career, you're in your career, you're hitting a roadblock, you want to take a left turn at Albuquerque, wherever you're going. I think good book.
I think grit is stubbornness. You know, I mean, I think that you dig in, you say, this is it, I'm doing this. And that's, I'm going to pick up that book because I agree with that 100,000,000%. You know, whatever your term is.
I don't know if it's stubbornness. I mean, there is a willingness to kind of bend and be malleable, but it's the bending and being malleable is all in the essence of grit. It's all to achieve some kind of goal, no matter what it takes.
Well, I think the stubbornness is, what I mean by stubbornness is, I'm going to make music and I'm going to sell my music one way or another. Now, maybe sometimes I have to smile and accept that, you know, rejection, and even though I don't agree with it. And sometimes I have to change my style. So I don't think stubbornness is in the amount of not being malleable. I think the grit and the stubbornness is, this is what I do, and I will get this done,
that's
whatever
exactly
it takes. On my side, I have the two spectrums. I always have at least two books I'm reading, one audio and one just old school reading. And the audio one is somebody I should not be liking her as much as I do. I don't read these types of books, but it's Ann Tyler, and she writes, this book is called Vinegar Girl, and it's kind of a family story. It's always, Ann Tyler is just an amazing writer at just quirky family stuff, whether it's tragedy and so that leads to something else, or just day-to-day living and gets into the insanity of life. And it just shows a writing style where she is so good at, even though these people are people you never would met, you hear her voice and you hear the character's voice so well that it's like they're just in the room with you and you're just watching them. How does she bring these characters to life? And I'm more of a crime or mystery or science fiction guy, which I generally read. I just have to read her stuff because she brings these, you know, warm-hearted, quirky stories. She wrote like The Accidental Tourist and stuff like that. And I'm almost like amazed that I love her so much, and I do. And then on the other spectrum of the big ultra massive Avengers Infinities War, which I just saw last night. And I was following that a week ago and I read the review in the Times, which was kind of like the universe itself. We don't know how the review was like, I don't know how to review this. Like, how do you review the universe? It was such a great quote. He's like, it's one of a series, and you know they're going to have to, without giving it away, yes, there's going to be something new coming next year. That's common knowledge. And it's one of a series, and it's so big and sprawling. He's like, I don't know if I liked it, I disliked it, and stuff like that. And to me, it's a phenomenon that when you get so big or so out there, outlandish, that it's not even reviewable, but everybody feels – everyone will see this movie. And it's just fascinating to me what, you know, like you watch the credits go for about 8 years. There's so many people involved in these films. So on the one side, it's just some writers been doing the same thing a million years. And on the other side, it's these big megalithic things that I loved it. But I understand the reviewer saying, well, how do you rate that versus being a regular movie? You can't.
So next episode, we're talking about making bad shit. If you know it, you won't be disappointed. If you know it's bad shit, you won't be disappointed. And maybe you'll be surprised if it's not. That's going to be our next episode. In the meantime, please send us your comments, your thoughts, anything that you want to ask, any ideas for future episodes or themes. Our email is nocureforcuriosity.podcast@gmail.com. Send us it in text. If you want to record an audio file, we'll insert you right into the program. And I think that is it for this time out.